Welcome to Edutopia Radio. This is School of Practice, where we share what works inside real classrooms. I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school teacher. It's a phrase teachers dread hearing in class. I'm done, or what do I do now? There's always a few students in every class who finish early, and making good use of that extra time while making sure they don't distract other kids can feel like a significant additional lift for teachers.
We say that it's important to let students work at their own pace. Really, we like students kind of grouped up because that's easier to manage.
This is Todd Finley. He's a professor of English education at East Carolina University and a former ELA teacher with experience in elementary through high school classrooms. Todd argues that these challenging moments are actually an opportunity to expand learning for fast workers.
Instead of asking the question, how do I keep fast finishers busy? The primary question should be, am I providing them with activities that are really meaningful?
Todd wrote an Edutopia article that collects 25 teacher-tested ideas for creative enrichment activities that require minimal prep and cleanup. Today, he'll explain how to use some of his favorites in your class, and he'll describe a few activities that even appeal to high schoolers. Plus, we'll discuss how to celebrate students who work more slowly, too. Spoiler alert, Todd was one of those kids. Okay, let's pick up there with our conversation.
So I have an origin story. My second grade teacher was someone who started us off right away with worksheets. And almost immediately, I felt swamped. And about 3 weeks in, I was doing things like watching students outside playing while I was in finishing my worksheet problems. And I was literally like the only kid in class that was just trying to catch up. My dad was actually a principal of a different school at the time. And so I finally admitted to him, like, okay, I'm drowning. And my dad said something really wise. He said, rather than just sitting and worrying about what you're doing, I want you to just focus on doing the next thing. So your emotions are out of the picture and you're just doing the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. Mm. So the next day, I stand up around like the 10 minute mark. I say, I'm done. And she literally says this, you're done?
Oh, and, no.
And you know, I nod. And so she takes my paper to look at it and she scans it. It's like, it looks okay. Wow. And so I swagger back to my chair. And so from then on, I really wanted that feeling of being a fast finisher. And so I really worked to be as fast as possible. And the truth is, there's a lot of rewards for finishing fast.
I do want to talk more about those rewards for finishing early later on. But first, I'm thinking about all of the new teachers out there who are in the audience. How much effort should they be putting into developing those kinds of activities?
So usually a menu of like 3 or 4 is good. And then rotate them out. Mm. So there's some novelty involved in those choices. I think that's a good way to start.
And are you announcing at the beginning of the school year, here are the activities that are available to you? Are you actually going over that with students? Or is it something that they kind of discover in a corner of the classroom? How does it work logistics wise?
So you set it up. You say, first of all, this is a privilege. If you're done, then you can choose from this menu of these things. And these choices will change. Then I'll talk about, you know, when can they do this? When their work is finished, when they've done a self-check of it, when they have done a check with the teacher, and then talking about the behaviors. So is it okay if you do something with a partner? So it's more social. Can you talk? Or is this a purely a silent kind of activity? And then usually it's fairly intuitive what students can do in different kinds of spaces. And I like having students like getting out of their seats and moving to a different space so they can go to an audio center where they can be listening to books that are available. If there's a letter center, then they can go and create letters for, you know, someone that they love. So it's fairly intuitive what they're doing in those spaces and how to treat the materials and how to put them back when you're done with them.
And I know some teachers even keep a log sheet where students record their activities and rate them, like loved it or too easy. So that provides accountability for students and feedback for teachers.
Right.
And speaking of feedback, I love both of these ideas you just mentioned, a letter writing station and a listening library. But I'm wondering, what would you say to listeners who are asking, what is the appeal for kids here? Why would they want to do more work after finishing their work?
just having the choice of things to do and having different kinds of activities that access different kinds of modes is very appealing to students. Like with Gen Alpha, if you have assignments that are connected to their identity, because Gen Alpha is like, well, I'm going to solve the environmental crisis. And so they already are anticipating themselves as making a contribution to the world. And so if you have them doing things like writing letters to politicians or writing letters to people that they appreciate, then they're doing things that are connecting with their identity as people who are making contributions to others and also to the planet.
Okay, let's dive into some of the details of the activities you recommend. I know you created this first one when you were teaching elementary students, but I could imagine it appealing at other grade levels too. It's a comic strip activity using Canva templates, from completely blank panels to pages with speech bubble prompts and animated characters already drawn in. So there's a good range depending on how artistically inclined students are feeling that day. Tell us about how this one works.
I found this actually when I was teaching second grade and then on up into the late elementary, students liked creating these cartoons. But it's actually helping them learn characterization and economy of language. So that's a fantastic kind of activity for students to do, and they like that, and they really like showing their peers what they've done. That's a fun experience.
You know, I'm also thinking about the interplay of the image along with the text in a comic. This could be a really good strategy for English language learners who might feel more fluent communicating through images and then using the captions to practice their emerging language skills.
And since visuals are our students' primary literacy, they're so visual. Anything that you involve them doing visually is fantastic, or even, you know, making their own slideshows for different things. And they might not realize that what you're really hoping they're going to do is work with the language, but they're developing proficiency in both of those competencies.
Okay. This next strategy comes from an elementary school teacher, Tara Dusko. And it's another one that could be adapted to work at any grade level. This one is great because students get to choose their activity prompt, but it's also easy for teachers to prep this ahead of time. Tell us more about what you call grab and go I'm finished strips.
So on the bulletin board, she would have an envelope, and in that envelope, she would have these sentence strips that would have a task on them. So students, when they were done, they'd go up to the bulletin board, reach inside the envelope, pull out a sentence strip. Then here's the genius thing. They would take it back to their seat, take out a piece of paper, and they would paste that sentence strip to the paper. And what's nice is it focuses the student on what the task is as they do the assignment on the paper, but it also helps the teacher more efficiently process the stuff that they're getting.
Right. And Tara has activities like write a concrete poem in the shape of a bird, or research a famous American and write 10 facts about them. What kinds of activities and prompts work well for older students?
When I used to do that, I liked sort of the absurd. So I would have students do things like, which one of your peers would be the person who would be best to lead us out of a zombie apocalypse?
Yes.
Or would you rather be known for having fantastic hair or a fantastic speaking voice, and why? Mm. These kinds of choices where they're thinking about their own identity and their own preferences. And then also, if I can somehow relate the activity to their culture, then I'm starting to have them engage that assignment in a way where they have a lot of momentum in doing it.
I love that. Okay, now I want to loop back to your listening activity, because obviously as a podcast host and fan, I am super enthusiastic about this one.
I do like having students do podcasts. One of the teachers that I worked with, he created this media studio. And what he was doing was he'd have the students write scripts and they'd perform these scripts. Now, the issue with that is that, you know, if a lot of students are quietly doing work and then you have some students that are recording things, that's not awesome. However, what they can do is they can work on scripts and then do the broadcasting when they have other kinds of time, or even something that they can do at home with their phones.
After the break, we'll talk about Todd's fast finisher strategies for high schoolers who might need a little more direction. And we'll get his take on the debate around offering extra credit for these bonus activities. Be right back.
Have you heard about Edutopia's free newsletter, The Research is In? Each month, our editors dig deep into the latest insights from the learning sciences and break them down to help you implement the findings in your classroom or school community. Want to take a look? You can read a recent edition and subscribe at edutopia.org/the research is in.
Todd, as a parent of a high school student, I can imagine that activities for older students could feel like opportunities to be off task. How are you ensuring that kids are working productively?
Well, the cool thing about high school students is that they want to be viewed as adults.
Yes.
So you can sort of lean into that in the things that you're having them do. One of the ideas that's kind of future facing that I really liked is having high school students spend time during their extra time analyzing future pathways. And there's a few sites for that, like one is called Big Future, which was created by the College Board. And it's a space where high school students, I mean, younger students can do it too, but it's great for high school students because they're really thinking about what comes next. They can look at what colleges are out there that are great in something that I'm interested in doing, and then what's required to get in, and then also what is campus life like for students at these colleges, so they can start to imagine themselves in those scenarios. And particularly for students who are first generation college students, having a vision of what it looks like and that there's a place for me there is a really useful task. And then there's also something called the Occupation Outlook Handbook. I think it's the Bureau of Labor Statistics that puts that out. And that actually details different kinds of jobs and what's the pay like, and do you need a college degree for that? So I think that's useful. And then there's also military.com for some students who are interested in different branches of the service and what are the benefits for that and how long do you stay in and what's required. And those are things that, again, play into students' sense of identity of, I want to have a meaningful life. What's a place for me out there that I can see? And all that's going to help with that insecurity of what's next.
I love this idea of making time in school for students to explore this and using their extra time in a way that has a direct impact on their life. But I'm curious to understand how this works in class. Should you provide some focus for students? Maybe there's a goal that they're working towards.
I didn't have this idea when I was teaching, but the way that I would set it up is I would definitely have a reflective component to it, either audio or in writing, which is, okay, in looking at future pathways, your job is to come up with your top three jobs and then report on that, like what are the pros and cons of this job. And I think this is one of those activities that is inherently meaningful to them, so they're not going to mind the extra step of actually writing about it.
Okay, and you have another activity for middle and high school students that also ties in with future careers. This one specifically relates to software engineering. Tell us how Code and Create works.
What's kind of cool about this is there's a couple programs that are great. One is called Construct 3, which is a great coding program for kids who want to make games, for kids who are 8 years old and up. And then there's another coding program called Unity Learn. It's also a web-based program for coding, and that's for kids 16 years and up. And that's challenging, but certainly doable. And particularly for some kids, they're going to be so into that because they view themselves as being coders one day.
Now, I know there's a debate around whether or not teachers should reward students for doing these extra activities. And specifically, should students be offered extra credit or bonus points that would impact their grade? What's your take on that?
So I think there is a place for extra credit. It kind of depends on your philosophy. But here's the downside of offering extra credit. You'll have some students that are in this arms race of stockpiling points so that they'll do well in class. What happens then is you might have a student that has earned an A, but it might not actually reveal anything about their proficiency. And then again, you're going to have some students that just want to do this other thing because they're passionate about that. So I don't think we need to give extra credit for that.
So what I'm hearing you say is that there's a lot of value in enrichment activities that are intrinsically motivating for kids, regardless of extra credit.
Right.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to consider some concerns voiced by teachers in our community. One teacher, his name is Gordon, wondered if these kinds of fast finisher activities subtly tell kids that being fast is better. Gordon wrote, "We need to value those who take more time as they may be more analytical or reflective." What would you say to that, Todd?
I completely agree. I think we can give students who are slower in terms of finishing and processing some gold stars as well. We could talk about them in terms of being, "I like how methodical and careful you are."
Ah.
And it seems to me that you are really showing the kind of attributes of a scientist here, of just being really careful, making sure everything's right before you turn it in. I really admire that. You're really respecting that they have their own process and pace and strategies that are working. At the same time, you can also say to some students, "I notice you're being really, really careful with your handwriting. Go ahead and be a little more sloppy in this situation."
Yes,
because that's,
yes,
that's okay. That. And let's just see if we can speed you up by 10%.
That observation is so powerful. Not attaching a value, but just observing what students are actually doing, which we know is such a good way to build relationships with students. I want to share one more concern from a teacher in our community. Her name is Gail, and she wonders if allowing kids to have downtime when they finish early might actually be a good thing. She writes, "They can discover within themselves how to use a few idle minutes." Todd, what do you think about that?
I think that's so smart. Absolutely, I agree with that. When they've done polling of adolescents, the research was saying that what students crave more than anything is unstructured time with their peers.
Mm.
And I think it's really important that students get to rest, right? And get to daydream and be inefficient sometimes too, because that's a really important thing for our cognition. The notion of students working as fast as they can, as hard as they can all day long is not the ticket to success.
Here are three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, if you're just getting started creating fast finisher activities for your students, Todd's menu of approaches can help. Pick three or four easy activities, set up clear ground rules, and switch up the menu at least once or twice during the year to keep things fresh. If you don't have time to put that together, don't worry. You can always fall back on print and audiobooks, puzzles, or occasionally, some good old-fashioned daydreaming. Two, if you offer extra credit for these activities, proceed with caution. This could create an inequitable assessment system and even grade inflation. Educator and author Joe Feldman argues that extra credit can also be damaging to student motivation because it places an emphasis on grades and points rather than learning. Instead, like Todd suggested, try leaning into activities that have intrinsic value for kids because they engage students' passions and identities. And finally, as Todd writes in his article, keep in mind the tortoises among your classroom hares. And remember to also celebrate methodical, careful thinking in your class. Special thanks to Todd Finley. He's a professor of English education at East Carolina University and a former K-12 teacher. Todd has contributed more than 100 articles to Edutopia over the years, and he's the author of a new book coming out in December 2025. It's called Classroom Cheat Codes: Effective Teaching Strategies to Power Up Engagement. And if you're looking for even more activities for students who finish early, Todd's Edutopia article has 25 strategies across grade levels. That's 20 that we didn't have time to talk about here. You'll find a link to the article in the show notes, along with links to other articles and research we mentioned in this episode. We love hearing from you. Send us your stories, ideas, and questions, and let us know what you'd like us to cover in future episodes. Our email is podcasts@edutopia.org. And if you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And please, tell a colleague about the show. This episode was produced by Anne Noisani and edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. Special thanks to Yuki Terada. I'm Kristen Leong. We'll see you again soon.